Brishus Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Dr. Lamb, Brishus Rosh HaYeshiva, and President Joel, I begin by thanking Rabbi Brander for the extraordinary privilege of participating in this occasion and to give a tremendous yashar koach to you and your staff for creating it. A few months after the Rav passed away, I was at an academic gathering, and a professor who was not part of the Orthodox world, possibly not even part of the religious world, came over to me and he said, with palpable excitement, "I heard that you studied with Rabbi Soloveitchik." I said, "Yes." I could feel his envy. He said, "Well, what courses did you take? Were you in the class when he was working out the ideas of Lonely Man of Faith?" Now, aside from the fact I must have seemed older to him than I actually was, I said, "No, he didn't do philosophy in his classes when I was at YU." The fellow looked baffled. "What did he teach?" he asked me. "Talmud," I told him. He looked even more baffled, and then I told him that it was a one-course load, and he was triply baffled. I inferred that he was not all that familiar with the point of Isha Halacha, and so I tried to explain. Rabbi Soloveitchik, I said, and I'll embellish a little, was part of an extraordinary family of rabbinic scholars. Torah was his lifeblood, his passion, his very being. It was his meshivat nefesh. It vivified and energized his soul in the darkest of personal times. It was central to his religious experience. He invested endless hours in preparing. His thousands of students went on to become masters of Torah, rabbinic and lay leaders, and not philosophy PhDs. But at the same time, I went on, he related Torah to philosophy in an electrifying way. In fact, to see Talmudic learning and rabbinic learning at this level, with philosophy at this level, and creating a conversation between them at this level, that had not been seen since the Rambam. And I only wish I had in hand an article published 3 years later by Rabbi Yitzchak Twersky, Zichrono Levracha, where he articulated the question of philosophy far better than I could have, and far better than I can actually do it now. The professor got it, but he walked away in a daze. Maybe it was because of my verbosity, probably, though, because he could not fathom genius of the Rav's rank. I took away from that conversation a lasting impression, and that is that the philosophy of the Rav, the little, even given the little that this man had read, captured the attention and respect of the larger world, and I have seen this last point confirmed over and over in the 20 years since that conversation. Why am I telling you this? I'm not telling you this because I think that the Rav needs haskamas, though I think we can allow ourselves some measure of gratification. I am telling you because if the Rav's machshava is an object of fascination in the Rishus HaRabim, in circles outside of his social world, and perhaps even negative toward that world, it behooves us to ask ourselves, in our own home, even apart from the peerless way in which he articulates the values of Torah study, it behooves us to ask, how should this philosophy resonate in our own home? Because of the richness of the Rav's work, there are multiple ways to do this. I am going to propose one, and that is that the philosophy as a whole balances a stark assessment of the human condition with stirring optimism and indomitable faith. My colleague, Rabbi Shalom Carmi, who has done so much for Jewish thought in general, and the Rav in particular, and worked closely with the Rav on manuscripts, Rabbi Carmi wrote, "What did I learn from the Rav that I could not learn anywhere else? Conventional religion tends to edit reality, to soft-pedal existential conflict, to make the ugly aspects of reality disappear behind a rosy glow. The Rav's memorable and sometimes brutal honesty taught us that religion is no escape from conflict, but the ultimate encounter with reality. Or as Rabbi Reuven Ziegler put it in his wonderful book, it is the frank acknowledgement of inconvenient facts. For example, the Rav understands human weaknesses and vulnerabilities. He defines them, and he even talks about his own. He talks of the need to encounter defeat and to accept it. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Schlitter wrote, "The Rav's legacy is not just spellbinding shiurim, magnificent drushos, electrifying chidushim, but the candid recognition of failure. He has imbued us with a sense of both the frailty of majesty and the majesty of frailty." The Rav doesn't paper over suffering and death and cruelty. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reasons may be for allowing these evils, we humans have to treat suffering and loss as absurdities, as monstrosities, and must fight to overcome them. Forget about theodicies, that is, explanations of evil. Forget about making evil seem good in the totality. Go out and fight it, because evil is a dreadful fiend with whom no pact may be reached and no reconciliation is possible. Or consider the state of Israel. The realities of anti-Semitism and assimilation precluded the Rav's seeing the state as component of a messianic process, and his own powerful version and expression of Zionism was founded on other principles. The human condition, the Rav said realistically, is one of crisis. We are, in a far from trivial measure, driven by biological urges, and we are split down the middle. He articulates the complexity of life, its many-sidedness, its self-contradictory character, its antinomies and its ambiguities, that is, its contradictions and ambiguities. In short, the dialectic, or the going back and forth, the dialectic of existence. And so, no illusions. But realism isn't pessimism. The stress on dialectic means that there is another side of the coin, or another pole of the pendulum. Yes, we are subject to nature and to biology, but we are not their prisoners. We have freedom of choice. We have the freedom to create ourselves. We can control not our actions, not only our actions, but our emotions. We can assert our humanity and a spirituality. We cannot make human life perfect. We cannot do away with flaws and struggles. But there is much that we can do. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs a mission accomplished, the Rav stressed, he sends human beings, be they Moshe or Mordechai and Esther or Mashiach. These are all symbols of human potential. We can use our flaws to energize repentance, to remake ourselves, to sanctify ourselves, to redeem ourselves. We can use suffering creatively to improve ourselves or to bond as a people who exercise sympathy towards others. In the face of evils, we can draw on our divinely endowed creative powers to develop and to harness science and technology and economics and political science and all areas of human endeavor. In all the efforts of Adam the First and Lonely Man of Faith, we can harness all that in the battle against suffering and death and all evils. We can be partners in creation, shutaf b'ma'aseh b'reishit. And we have no right to tell the world, that's the Rav's words, that famine, disease, war, oppression, materialism, permissiveness, pollution. He says we have no right to tell the world that these problems are exclusively theirs. There is much else, but the ultimate point is that we can balance our hard-nosed view of reality with the resounding affirmation of human potential. We must have both an ethic of victory and an ethic of defeat. We will not eliminate the ugly things in life until the end of days, We will not escape the horrors and the absurdities of the world, but we will deal with them in ways that give meaning to human life. And what the Rav wrote about his wife, Tanya, Zichrono Livracha, is true of him as well. He showed, and he shows through his works, great courage, sublime dignity, total commitment, uncompromising truthfulness. And so, I must thank that awed and eventually dazed academic who approached me at that gathering to make me realize the truth of what one scholar wrote to me a few weeks ago. He wrote, "There is no genre of reader who will not benefit from reading the Rav." I close with this. When the Rav spoke about the Seder night, he highlighted the difference between the mitzvah of remembering all year round and the mitzvah of Sipur, of telling the story on the Seder night. Today, we not only remember the Rav, but we tell the mitzvah of Sipur. It's a day in which so many of us worldwide, and not just the presenters, have things to say. And the telling has two aspects, an outer aspect and an inner aspect. A ma'aseh ha-mitzvah and a kiyum ha-mitzvah, to use some of the Rav's favorite terminology. The outer mitzvah, the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, is simply our all being here, watching online, discussing. The kiyum, the inner fulfillment, is reliving the Rav's presence, and it's that deep internal love for and devotion to the Rav's persona, and the Rav's voice, and the Rav's shiurim, and the Rav's writings, and the Rav's life story. And along with that is an infinite, inexpressible gratitude. Lasi peik perishusa. To a man who liked to call himself a Malamed, a teacher who shaped and led a community who impacted and will continue to impact on history, who inspired thousands, and who taught us how to create our very lives. Yehi Zichro Baruch.